Okay, fine. So, we are holding in the middle of what I believe to be an extraordinarily important theological difference between the Hasidic and the Misnagdic approach, which we spoke about last week, which I want to review. And then I want to discuss a little that there's a forerunner of this already in the Middle Ages, by the Chokrim, by the philosophers in the Imei HaBinayim. And then let's learn from Eliezer Berkowitz to see, and you'll tell me what you think, what he's saying. So first of all, we're holding in the Rav, let's just read again that paragraph that started this whole debate, the whole action. It's the paragraph that begins, "The above said, which is true of the universal faith community in general." You see it? It's in the middle of three, the third thing in this chapter. The paragraph begins, "The above said." Everyone sees it? Now again, what's the Rav discussing here? Basically what the Rav's saying is that the third ingredient of the covenantal community, the covenantal community, the third ingredient is not only that it's an encounter with God, not only to include the other, but there has to be a practical message. There has to be a lemaisa. There has to be a, what he calls, kerygma, some kind of message, some kind of news, some kind of aspect of bearing to practical life. Right? And that's what the Rav was talking about, that it would be obscene to say that God took Ezekiel and Isaiah through the highest heavens above the cherubs and to the seraphim, the angels, just to give them an experience, but rather it had to do with a message for everybody. Right? That's what we learned. That's this third thing. Yeah? That's clear? Now, in this, let's read this paragraph again. "The above said, which is true of the universal faith community in general," that what? That any faith community, we have to say, has some kind of practical bearing and practical relevance in people's lives. "This is true of a universal faith community in general. It has particular validity for the halachic community. Even more does it have relevance for the halachic community." Right? In other words, it's more in halacha, in our religion, more than any other faith community. Why? And here's that sentence that irked me. "The prime purpose of revelation, in the opinion of halacha, is related to the giving of the law. The whole purpose of God revealing himself to us, according to Torah, according to halacha, is to give us the law. And the God-man confrontation serves a didactic goal." In other words, not only is it by all prophets that the whole purpose of the prophecy is that there should be something practical, lemaisa, the Rav learns that the whole revelation at Sinai, the whole God-man confrontation is didactic, is educational. Has to have something relevant to lemaisa.
Can you? But the diak might be that he says here the opinion of halacha. Maybe that's he. It's limited to that. It's like it's not. It's okay. According to halacha, this is what this is.
So you want to say
it's
you want to read the
deal,
sentence?
Right? You hear it?
I hear you. You want to say that in the halachic aspect of Torah?
Yeah. Well,
okay.
Of course,
so here's the shaila. My question to you is like this. If you're looking at Sinai through a halachic lens, that itself makes you a misnagid. No, that already
that's not how he said it. He goes,
halachic man, the whole book, The Halachic Man by the Rav, right? As the commentators say, it's the phenomenology of a misnagid. It's the way of looking at Torah without chassidus. What's the whole book Halachic Man? Halachic Man versus homo religiosus. Who in the Rav's philosophy is a chassid, is chassidus. That the Rav says it in the footnotes, the Rav says it clearly. So halachic man, as opposed to homo religiosus, is exactly that. What is your relationship with God? Is it a religious relationship that also has halacha? Or is it a halachic relationship?
But the funny thing is
in the way of the form.
This was not how the Rav was personally.
I agree. The Rav was a closet chassid,
That wasn't a closet chassid.
So here's the thing. If I
he embodied dveikus in its real sense, and
100%.
So maybe that.
So here's the thing. In halachic man, when you read halachic man, so he, as he says in the title page, the whole book is essentially a portrayal of his father, Reb Moshe.
Right.
But I ask you, when you read halachic man, when does the Rav wax the most poetic? I think when he says the Hasidic point of view, in my opinion. And I was, you're right, he was living in both worlds, the Rav. I agree with you. The Rav wasn't limited, and I don't think the Rav intended to limit to only the halachic man. I've told you many times, I heard Rabbi Weinberger says over from that he heard from Rabbi Tversky the story of when the Rav wanted to give a shir on Likutei Torah. Remember that story that he wanted to give a shir on Likutei Torah, and which is from the Alter Rebbe Chassidus, mm-hmm. like nobody came. Mm-hmm. And the Rav cried to his son-in-law, to Rabbi Tversky, said, "They want my brain, but they don't want my heart." Mm-hmm. So I agree with you. So the Rav is. So we have to like sort of differentiate
but he also
between.
Says you should look at a beautiful sunset and think about Shkia and like all the you know.
Right, and that and that's the halachic man phenomenology.
That's what
not
says
like Chassidus. I agree with
you,
100%. So I'm not that. So what I'm saying to you is that the Rav was an expert in both phenomenologies because he probably lived with both. He probably lived with both. I'm not to get into the personal the Rav. That's something that I don't have to tell you. All his students have been debating for the past 20. How long has it been? 24, 25 years, 26 years.
20.
Huh.
93?
93, yeah. 24 years. Wait, what's his yard site, do you remember?
Pesach.
Achron Shel Pesach?
Just had the Rebbe's.
Yeah, so the Rebbe was 94. That's what I was just calculating. So mom was a year apart. A little more than a year apart, yeah. Tov, so the Maisa, so let's leave the Rebbe the person, but in theology, Shalom Aleichem, in theology, in the what's the theology of the Rebbe, of what he's describing in Lonely Man of Faith? So the way that he's saying over here is very straightforward, the non-Hasidic, the Mesnagdic way of looking at things. So the way you're saying, Jonathan, that in the opinion of the Halacha, the revelation, the opinion of the Halacha, I hear what you're saying, 100%. I do hear what you're saying. But the truth is, but what I wanted to say to you is that even if you were to say that maybe you have a diak that the Rav in that sentence is saying that from the outlook of the halachic part of Torah, that's the purpose of the revelation, right? That's your diak in that sentence. But the next two sentences schlug that up. The next two sentences show that that diak is not correct. Because he says right away, the God-man confrontation serves a didactic goal. Meaning that the Rav is teaching up the whole God-man confrontation is didactic. The whole God-man confrontation is a God as a teacher. God involves himself in the covenantal community through the medium of teaching and instructing. The halacha has looked at, right? In other words, not like the altar, but we learned last week in Tanya that revelation, what was revelation? It wasn't didactic. The opposite. The whole revelation was about bittul b'metzias, the soul leaving the body, becoming unified with God. Right, and then we learn in chapter 34 of Tanya, the Alter Rebbe says, and then halacha was given to be able to continue that bittul, that nullification into God's light. But not that the whole purpose is didactic.
Except the next sentence though says the halacha, again in Jonathan's sense, the halacha has looked upon God. So you're almost sandwiched
he's pounding it, it comes up
again. Fine, so how do you want to learn? You want to learn that the pshat is that the halachic way of looking at it as opposed to what? The Hashkafa?
I don't know, but he's clearly saying, I mean, halacha is all about the law. Okay.
Yeah.
Also, what's interesting, though, is when you say Api Chassidus, is there this idea of with Hashem just connecting, or is it more that he's also...
So here's the thing. So here's what I wanted to talk about, the famous debate during the Middle Ages. Now, you have to remember, during the Middle Ages, there's an interesting Jewish history, and I'm talking about already the late Rishonim, right, late Rishonim, and then the Ikrim, the Barbanel. We're talking 1300s, 1400s. These years, so these years was an interesting time in history because on one hand, they had just gotten over this huge debate about philosophy, right? The Maimonidean controversy, Maimonidean controversy about whether philosophy is okay or not, which was in the 1100s and the 1200s, and then Kabbalah was just starting to be revealed in the world. So you had these elements in the Jewish people where it's like, now in today's day and age, like everything's on the table. Like we know all the different streams of Judaism and where they're coming from, and this one says that that's a because, that one says that's a because. So like it's very clear shittas. Like you just have to choose sides. Today, like anyone that tries to make up their own hashkafa is b'chlal, bad mouth, right? There's no privilege for such a thing. So today it's just a question of picking teams. Back then, it wasn't so clear-cut. There was like these philosophical elements in Judaism, right? Philo, some people were saying comes from Plato, and Platonic elements, and you had these Kabbalistic elements that people hadn't heard of Kabbalos, and so this is like these very interesting time. So one of the big debates that the Shlok, the Shlok Kodesh actually, in the book the Shlok, he actually in his Esser, in his Shara Oisius, he actually has an entire chapter debated to this idea. The debate that went on is, are mitzvahs, this is the way the words are used, are mitzvahs sgulim or tivim? That's the words that the Rishonim used. Sgulim or tivim? Which translated as tivim means natural. Sgulim, you know what a skula is? How do you translate school in English? Like a good luck charm? What? You know, like a school, like putting a key in a challah after Pesach, right?
That's
a
dessert.
Whatever it is, whatever your particular school might be, you know. There's a minug that in Russia there was some, I guess some Hasidim had, that the man would step on the woman, on his challah's foot under the chuppah. Why? Because that way she'll be subjugated to him, that she'll listen to him. So he would step on that woman's foot under the chuppah.
What a beautiful thing.
Isn't it beautiful, right? It's, of course, it's very romantic, right? To be machnia, whatever. So wait, listen, so somebody said to the Rebbe, so this, I guess, I don't know the details, but one family, was, I guess two families getting Russian families, and the girl said that she refused that the minhag should be, she didn't want it, whatever. And there's a whole thing. So finally, the Rebbe said to the Chassan that Chazal say, "Kol sheish be Yerushamayim dvarv nishmoim." Anyone that has Yerushamayim, his words are heard. So he says, "Do that skula, do Chazal skula instead. Forget the stepping on the foot, right?" So skula means like, you know, it's like a good luck charm sort of thing, right? You do this and it'll cause that to happen. Which b'chal is something that person. I don't know about you. I assume Jay's with me on this one. Rubs me the wrong way. The whole thing. Like, I actually, you know, my wife and I ate by somebody's house here in Teaneck. It's not the most superstitious. It's more than superstitious. We ate in somebody's house.
The Red Bendel concept.
Red Bendel. But so we ate someone's house, and like, this woman gave like this whole list of skulas. Like, you want to have money, do this. You want to have shidduch, do this. Whatever happened to praying to God? Whatever happened in believing that God, you have a relationship with God, and asking Him for stuff? This whole school of thing, like, you're gonna like trick God, like, you know, I'm gonna chop Him, I'm gonna do the school, and that's gonna make Him, whatever. Anyway, but that's not the point of what I'm trying to get into. The point is the word skula. Skula means tivium means if you will do X, Y naturally will derive from it. Y is a natural derivative of X. Sgula means that if you do X, you'll be given Y, but there's no inherent connection between X and Y. Give you an example. There's such a thing as, let's say, earning a living based on commission. Why does earning a living based on commission, why does that work well for an employer and the employee?
Motivation.
Why does it motivate you?
It's symbiotic. You'll only benefit the owner, if the owner benefits, you benefit.
Right. So and you making more money is tivi. It's not the same. Like when you have like the, you know, you happen to meitzachen beinav, you know, your boss happens to like you, so he'll give you a raise. That's tzgula. Mm-hmm. I'll say a better mashal, which the Rishonim actually give. Okay. What? Let's say you have a person's really desperate for a job. And he sees an ad in a paper that there's a job that they're paying $250 an hour. Wow, that's great. $250 an hour, that's awesome. He says, sign me up. He goes, he takes an interview, and they say, what's the job? So they say to him, listen, take this bat, stand in an empty room, and just swing it back and forth. And the guy's like, for how long? He's like, no, from 9 to 5. Just do that all day. $250 an hour. Just swing the bat back and forth from 9 to 5. How long do you think he'll last? Maybe, right? You think he could last a week, 2 weeks? Ah, you're making $250 an hour, but naturally, human being, there's only so, you can't like do something that doesn't actually have a positive effect, right? That's, by the way, in the Lashon of Chazal explained that that's Avedas Perech, that you're not even allowed to be Mavid, and Avedas Perech is that Aveda that doesn't have a Toyelis, that nothing comes out from it. A person by nature can't like do that for too long. So the Rishonim say like this.
That example is, the Rishonim actually bring that example.
Well, not the bat.
Something completely useless.
Something like that. Yeah. They're given money to do something that has no toyelis, that has absolutely no purpose to it. So now, Ask the Rishonim like this. When God says to pick up a lulav, put on straps, wrap straps around your arm, and you're going to get schar, right? We believe in reward and punishment. Is it the schar, sguli or tivi? Is it the pshat that really these acts, like waving a lulav around, it's now, you know, 20 years anniversary of Harry Potter, you know, you wave your lulav around, or eating matzah on the Pesach night, or putting on tefillin, whatever. These are essentially acts that are meaningless. You know, burning a red cow, right? There's nothing really essentially meaningful to them. It's just God says, do these 613 things, and I'll give you a reward. Sguli, or tivi, that the mitzvahs themselves actually bring about the reward.
That's a day in the Gemara.
That what?
Mitzvah's goreres mitzvah, avera goreres avera.
That doesn't say the schar.
No, but that's the whole schar is mitzvah goreres mitzvah.
Mitzvah goreres mitzvah doesn't mean that the second mitzvah is the schar of the first mitzvah.
Second paragraph of Shema. You don't have to go to the Gemara.
Wait, second. Let's say one thing. One thing at a time. First of all, you said that's the mitzvah goreres mitzvah. That's not a schar. That's Chazal saying is an added benefit. That one mitzvah will let you do another mitzvah. That doesn't really answer the question. That could just mean because it puts you in a better situation and makes your personality more refined. You'll be. There are a lot of different explanations you could give for that. That doesn't resolve this. As for the second parsha of the Shema, Bechlal, you have a question that the Rambam himself asks in Mishneh Torah. This is a very simple Pashat theology in Mishneh Torah. The Rambam says in Ilchas Tshuva, we believe the Gemara says in Chulin Schar Mitzvah B'hai Al Maleka. One doesn't get rewarded in this world for mitzvahs. When we talk about Schar, right? The rain and the wine, oil, and wheat promised in the second paragraph of the Shema is not the schar for mitzvahs. Schar, we believe, is an olam haba, is in the next world. Right?
No. We ask for peace and good health. We ask for all sorts of good things. Now.
Again, don't confuse asking for things in prayer with reward for mitzvahs. It's two different things. There's asking for stuff in prayer.
Right.
Because again, we're not skula type of Jews. We believe that you actually have to pray and have a relationship with God to get stuff. Right? Mm-hmm. So that's prayer asking for stuff. Reward for mitzvahs, we believe schar mitzvah b'hai al-malekah. The Gemara says the reward for mitzvahs is not in this world. The reward for mitzvahs is not in this world. The reward for mitzvahs is a spiritual reward. By the way, and you should just know, the Svarim explained, this is already on the Rishayim, a fascinating thing. You know why we can't... The Gemara says we don't get rewarded for mitzvahs in this world. You know why we can't get rewarded for mitzvahs in this world?
It's not possible.
Why is it not possible?
Too great.
Yeah.
What's
too great?
The reward.
The Gemara says, hey, a little piece of it. Yeah, give him a down payment, right? The Gemara says that in what merit did Nebuchadnezzar merit to rule the world? Nebuchadnezzar ruled the world, him three generations, him and his child and his grandchild. He took three steps in honor of Akala. Three steps in honor of Akala, he merited to rule the world. So imagine the reward for putting on tefillin once, that Tzemach Tzedek actually writes, you should just know, that Tzemach Tzedek writes in Derech Mitzvah, he says, imagine you were a king that lived for 1,000 years, with all the tithes, any tainug, all the pleasures of this world that you would want for 1,000 years, with no war, no strife, nothing. Your mom's like one of these, muftis that they have, anything you want, 1,001 Arabian Nights, 1,000 years, anything you want. Tzemach Tzedek says, that can't be compared to even one moment of tainug ruchni, of what the tainug of ruchni is. We don't understand Tainug Ruchni. It's like it's impossible that you can't understand what that Tainug is. Like 1,000 years of all the Gashmis you could want doesn't compare to 1 second of Tainug Ruchni. So there's no way to get Schar in this world for mitzvahs. So the second paragraph of the Shema is a big question. So why is it telling us that if Hayom Shema Tishmu Mitzvah, so you're going to get wine and oil and wheat? So the Rambam asks in the Mishnah Torah Nechas Tshuva, and the Rambam says that that's not Schar. That God is saying that besides schar, you also get added benefits. That I'm going to make the world in a way that will allow you to serve me better. It's not reward. It's added benefit. I always say, I think a great mashal is if you're a really good employee, you know, you start out, you know, working in a basement of a company or something. If you're a really good employee, you get a beautiful office. right, with a beautiful view. That's not your salary. That's not compensation. That's just what do they call that?
A perk.
So the Rambam says that's what the second part of the Shema. Anyway, but let's go back to what we're talking about. Yeah.
If you understand that the mitzvah is fulfilling the will of God, creates the connection between you and God. Where would you put that between?
Wait. I hear what. Okay, so it depends. What do you mean by connection?
The will of God is to
wait. You know, do me a favor. Let me ask you. Let's one thing at a time because I'm going to get there.
Okay.
Let's say the Rishonim say so. The reward of mitzvahs, the reward that mitzvahs bring about, are they skuli, that they're just you're waving a bat, in a room, you're waving a lulav, and so God gives you a reward. But these acts themselves. Somebody cooking popcorn, yeah. Right?
Toast or something.
It's probably my wife. She likes popcorn.
So my wife too. Yeah. So there's the acts themselves don't have any real meaning. It's just you happen to get rewarded for them. That's seguli. Or tivi is the pshat that the schar of the mitzvah itself, the schar mitzvah, the way the Alter Rebbe teaches up is the pshat is that the mitzvah itself tivi that brings down. Or like for instance. When you're farming your own land, you feel that you're actually causing it to happen. Or when you have your own business, why do people like having their own business, even though they might make less money? Because you're causing it to happen, right? Now, so in this debate about mitzvahs, who do you think says what in philosophy and Kabbalah? Which one says what? Let's say in the philosophical way of Judaism or the more mystical way of Judaism, which one says what? Why? Well, philosophy says the philosophical way of looking at mitzvahs is that the mitzvahs don't, that God doesn't really get anything. The mitzvahs don't really do anything. It's just you get rewarded. Tivi, sguli.
I think a Rambam who's very tivi and.
But he's not tivi.
Why? The Rambam and Mernevuchim would say tivi?
No, just the opposite. You said sguli.
Sure. The Rambam is very sguli. The Rambam is like. It's very much about just the mitzvahs, the things God says to do, and you get reward. There's no inherent connection. That's the philosophical way of looking at it.
Really?
Yeah.
Sure.
I never thought of Rambam in that way. I think of Rambam in terms of, I was mostly thinking of like the notion of Olam Haba and that kind of stuff.
Of what?
Of Olam Haba and that kind of
stuff. Yeah, Olam Haba.
And that kind of schar, that based on your development and your intellectual perfection, you have greater.
What you're saying is 100% right about das, about intellectual perception.
But the mitzvah.
I'm talking mitzvahs, lulav.
Mitzvahs have.
The Rambam himself, you're very correct that the Rambam distinguishes between intellectual development and mitzvahs maisius.
But I assume there's a connection between those mitzvahs and the kind of evolving the das, refining the das.
Could be that there's a connection that I don't remember offhand the Rambam saying that, but I'm just saying the mitzvahs as is. When an Amaretz picks up a lulav, no das, no nothing. The olam haba, eska la'olam haba, the olam haba you get for it. What's the pshat? That you get brownie points. You're waving the bat in the room and God is going to give you olam haba for it.
According to Rambam, this Amaretz who picks up a lulav doesn't get olam haba. He gets the schar of the mitzvah. Olam Haba is only attained through intellectual perfection.
Here we're starting to get into what's the difference between Schar and Olam Haba, but you're right. No, according to the philosophical way of talking about it, it's just that you get rewarded for the mitzvah. According to the Tivi, the Pshat, according to Kabbalah, it's that the mitzvah itself, both in Tivi, brings the Schar, which according to, definitely according to Chassidus, but even in Kabbalah, is Hashem's light. Nenem b'zivashchina. The mitzvah itself brings about the zivashchina. Now, I think that these very generally, and again, I'm not saying what the Rav held, but very generally, if you say the revelation at Sinai was essentially about halacha, so the revelation at Sinai, what is halacha? The revelation at Sinai is to give you halacha. What is the pshat revelation at Sinai give you halacha means? The revelation at Sinai is God giving laws of what to do. Right? So the whole purpose of revelation is for halacha. According to the way Tanya was saying, it's the exact opposite. The whole purpose of halacha is revelation. The whole purpose of halacha is to bring godliness into your world. So it's the question is the revelation to give you laws of what to do, which is how the Rav is saying, you have God as a teacher telling you what to do. Do these things. Do these laws. Or is the pshat that halacha is a continuation of that revelation? That's the two ways of looking at it.
Can I just back away? I don't understand the distinction between a... I know what a segula is, and I think I understand what segula is, but the other option I don't really understand. How could, of course there's no inherent connection in an esrog and schar. That's purely because Hashem says so.
So according to Kabbalah, that's not true. So here's the thing. Let me say this again. You're right. Let me explain better. According to Kabbalah, according to the Zohar and Chassidus, a lulav has in it God's light. Tefillin has in it the infinite light of God. When you put on tefillin, you are literally hugging the king, connecting to God's infinite light. The physical mitzvahs, the Zohar calls them 248 limbs of the king, meaning in the matzah is Hashem's light, in the tefillin is Hashem's light. You're actually drawing God's light upon you.
Right, but that's just a decision. God just could have just as easily said on Pesach, I want you to drink Dr. Pepper. But he didn't. It's not the matzah itself. It's because Hashem says, I'm going to put more of myself in this matzah. But it's not the matzah itself. He could have said, it's important that we all have Dr. Pepper. 4 cups of Dr. Pepper. And then we would do it.
Okay, so that's a very interesting... That itself is a different shaila. In other words, within this realm of Kabbalah and Chassidus, will you say that when we say the tefillin and lulav and the Kohen Gadol's garments are the limbs of the king, could he have had other limbs? So you say, of course, and probably most will say like you, there are some sources in Chassidus that say not like that. Because the Torah is as eternal as God is.
So the Kabbalistic approach would be more like there's specific things, and the Rambam will say.
Right, could have been Dr. Pepper. Yeah. Right, and Hanami. Right. But there are, according to Kabbalah and Chassidus, if you understand that literally Torah is one with God, then before there was such a thing as a world, there was already a lulav.
How do you say that? You can't say that. Take a look at... I'm talking Mibchinas Chassidus. You can't say it, because take a look at Shmon Esrei.
Yeah.
There are two major... The one major difference in how they end up in Shmon Esrei, the Misnagdim Asei Laman Shemecha Yiminecha, and Misnagdim say Kedusha Secha, and as the ultimate... objective of men is Asei Laman Torasecha. But Chassidim say just the opposite. The ultimate, it has nothing to do with Torah, has to do with Kedusha Secha. When it says Kucha Briches Takol Bioraisa Bari Alma, there are two approaches. The halachic approach, the Misnagdish approach, is he looked in the Torah. He looked in the fact that there was Lulav Tefillin. Well, Chassidim had... Torah didn't exist beforehand. Torah, when it says Oraisa, the actual meaning of Oraisa is not Torah.
What do you mean Torah?
It's Oraisa means the internal light of God. That's what the word means. It's only a borrowed term that we use today that Oraisa means Torah. Take a look at the etymology of the word
Oraisa.
Where
are you getting this from?
My own chiddush.
Oh, okay. Like I said, I'm not gonna. You want to develop your own theology? That's fine. But according to Chassidus Chabad, I'm not an expert. I'm fine. But according to Chassidus Chabad and other svarim, the Torah literally. I mean, based on the Ramban, it's really in Kabbalah called Torah Shmeisav Shal Hakadosh Baruch Hu, that. There's such a thing, the primordial Torah, Torah as it's one with God in essence, was as is now. But you're right, it's not intellect. It's not intellect, it's not laws, it's as it is just one with Hashem. It's a completely different form. It doesn't have a form, like God is infinite. But again, Chassidus believes that the Pasuk, V'simna ha'isa pilegesh, Le'alifas ben Esav, Timna was a concubine to Alifas, the son of Esav, is as eternal as God is. It doesn't mean concubine. and it doesn't mean alifas. It's but that's what the Ramban means, that they're all names of God. At that level, right, the Ramban says, the Torah Shmeis Kodesh Baruch, at that level, Chazir is a name of God. It doesn't yet manifest in this world the way it manifests here.
So according to that opinion, and just to, so I understand, that matzah is not holy because Hashem tells us that we should eat it, but matzah is holy because that almost precedes God himself.
That precedes God, is one with God. What do you mean precedes? Nothing precedes God.
Like, it's not.
It's one with God. It's as eternal as God is. It's his limb. It's God's infinite light manifests in matzah, in tefillin, in a sukkah.
Right, but that's
it doesn't precede him, Chalila.
That's his choice, right? Him? That's he decided that that's what we should do. And
again, Nachamal, so I'm telling you that itself is a matter of debate. But it's not. But that itself is a matter of that's not so clear. But one thing for sure, it's according to Chassidus and Kabbalah, it wasn't a random choice that he happened to choose a lulav as opposed to Dr. Pepper. It's the pshat that there's an inherent connection. Like you and your hands and feet.
Okay.
So you're not gonna, there's no distinction between the different mitzvos. Like certain mitzvos we see clearly the tivi benefit that's going to be, if you do it, there's going to be a positive outcome.
Again, when we say tivi over here, we're not talking about like what Lenny was saying before, rain and stuff. The tivi is the light of God that it's drawing down, which is the ultimate schar of the mitzvah. That's the tivi. Okay. Right? The tivi, the tivi is that you're drawing down God's light.
That's the reward itself.
We don't now experience it, but we will experience. In other words, the reward is the light of God, which we now don't feel. But you should know, by the way, that's what Gan Eden is not a place. Gan Eden is what you draw down on you in this lifetime. Gehenna and Gan Eden are not places, according to Chassidus.
In this lifetime,
whatever you draw down upon yourself. Is Gan Eden and Gehenim, when after 120, you will then become aware of what is surrounding you, what is now surrounding your soul. Mm. Forces of impurity or light of God? Which is what it means when Yaakov went in to steal the brachas from right by Yitzchak, it says, Rei Rech Bini Kerech Asada Shebercha Hashem, see the smell of my son like the smell of a field that God blessed. So it says Rashi brings in Nichnas Reich Gan Eden. He smelled the Reich of Gan Eden. It means that's actually Mispasha. The Gan Eden is around you. So after 120, you don't go to a different place. That's a childish, Dante type of Christian way of looking at it. It's not a place. It becomes revealed to you what you've drawn upon you. So, so the tivi is the light of God that you're actually drawing on you. Mm-hmm. That is what the tivi is.
It's being banked.
Huh?
It's being banked. That's being put away for future.
It's not banked. It's on you now.
I'm not aware of it.
Your physical body doesn't allow you to be aware of it. Your humanity doesn't allow you to be aware of it. Mm-hmm. But you're definitely different every time you do a mitzvah. You have more elokus. You have more godliness around you. I just want to say over in Tanya chapter 46, the Alter Rebbe says, what does it mean before you do a mitzvah, you say, Asher Kiddushonu b'mitzvayisav? What does Kiddusha mean? What does it mean, Asher Kiddushonu? We become sanctified. What does it mean to be sanctified? What does it mean, hafrasha? I do a mitzvah, I don't feel particularly mufrish. What is Kiddushonu? The Alter Rebbe teaches up, Kiddushonu is God's infinite light, which is transcendent from the world. That's one teach of the word Kiddushonu, his infinite transcendent light. And the other taich is Meloshin Kiddushin. Like Mekadosh is Isha. Man marries a woman, right? And the Alter Rebbe uses a Loshin, which is a beautiful Loshin.
You
want? You have a Tanya?
Sure.
Yellow.
Yeah.
Which
one? Red book, right?
The red book right on top of the yellow ones.
The yellow? The red book on the side.
He doesn't see that he's angle. Put your hand above the yellow book.
Above the yellow book.
Yeah, there you go.
I'm sitting low.
It's all about perspective, right? Listen to the Alter Rebbe's Lashon. He says about Ashikidu, what does it mean that you do a mitzvah Ashikidushana that you get that's like marriage? It's very pretty graphic. Lachin himshil shleim alav shalom. This is where shleim, wait. V'zesha kam Ashikidushana b'mitzvayisav ke'adam ha-mekadosh isha, person that betroths a woman, Lios, Jay, you'll translate for me, okay? Lios miyuchedes imay biyichud gomor.
To be secluded with her.
Secluded? He doesn't mean secluded.
Co-joined.
co-joined, consummated biyuchud gomer, k'moshikosev adovak biishtei v'hayu lebasar echad, which, by the way, he's learning not like Rashi.
One flesh.
One flesh. Rashi means they'll have kids.
Right.
But it doesn't. The simple explanation is that when they are actually intimately joined, they become one flesh. Kacha mamish, just like a man and woman, when they become intimately joined, they become one. Kacha mamish. V'yeser al kein le'ein ketz. So too, like a man intimate with his wife. Kacha mamish. So too, v'yeser mikein le'ein ketz. Infinitely more. Who yichud nefesh alikis aisekis b'tayr mitzvahs ba'arein sof. So too, and infinitely more, is your soul with God's infinite light, with God's essence when you do a mitzvah. Lachin him shel shleim alav shalom b'shir ashirim. Therefore, shleim amelach and shir ashirim gave a mashal b'yichud zeh liyichud chasen v'kala. Liyichud chasen v'kala. Listen to this. B'dveika chasheka v'chafetza b'chibuk v'nishuk. With cleaving, passion, longing, hugging, and kissing. In other words, doing a mitzvah is intimacy with God's infinite light. Asher kiddushanu. And the first taich is Maloshan Orein Sof. No, kiddushanu, kiddushin, and kiddush of Orein Sof. You're mamish becoming one with God's infinite light. And therefore, that according to the Hasidic theology, halacha is the continuation of the revelation at Sinai. Halacha is the way to be one with our Ein Sof. It's not something that you're doing because God gives you laws. It's not God as lawgiver. It's God as lover. Chassidus doesn't see God as a lawgiver. Chassidus sees God as a lover that's giving you his limbs. He's literally undressing himself and giving you his infinite light to actually become intimate with. That's what halacha is. That's what a mitzvah is.
I don't want to make a long sentence. I'm saying something, but it's not so much like a lover. It's more like a prostitute. Because in order to get the benefits, you have to do these things.
The opposite, Lenny. That's like saying, in order to be able to have relations with a woman, you have to use her hands, feet, and torso. That's exactly what you just said. In order to be able to have relations with a woman, you have to use her hands, feet, and torso.
I'm saying that you have to...
Wait, do you hear what I'm saying? Why does that not make sense?
It doesn't make sense.
Because relations is the hand, body, and torso.
Right.
So the lulav is God's limbs. It's not that he's saying to you, you'll get me if you do this. He's saying to you, here, anoichi ana nafshi ksavas yehavis. I gave myself, these are my limbs. Tefillin is God's torso. It is his limb.
And saying Shema.
Shema, all the mitzvahs, all the 240 mitzvahs. These are his limbs.
I gotta
meditate on it. Yeah.
Think about it, yeah.
Should.
I mean,
should. You should meditate on it. That's what Chassidim meditate on.
Mm-hmm.
Before you put on a talus, you think that you are going into God's infinity. This talus is how you're getting his infinity, and each mitzvah is another limb.
It's a nice
so this is the reason why Chassidim say L'shem Yichud?
That's exactly why they're saying L'shem Yichud. L'shem Yichud means that you're literally becoming unified with God by doing a mitzvah. It's mamish becoming unified with God when you do a mitzvah.
I think the Rambam, his head would explode.
Probably. Definitely. 100%, agreed. Agreed, 100%.
Shame Yichud is that we're connecting God. So Shame Yichud is we're connecting the Shechina to the Ein Sof.
You know how you're connecting the Shechina to Ein Sof? Because you are the Shechina. Through your soul being connected to God, that is how the Shechina is connecting to Ein Sof. You are the Shechina. The Neshamas Yisrael are the Shechina. That's what he explained in Tanya chapter 40. I mean, it's explained in many places, but that's...
So as we were hearing from Jay, his thoughts, and then Hugh turned and said, okay, where did you get that from? It was Jay, which was perfect and beautiful. Is that the same source as the Rebbe came with these things up? Meaning, he thought of... How much closer to reality is this... than Jay's thoughts, other than it came from two different people.
So do you want my answer as a chassid, as an academic,
as
a regular Jew?
All three, or all, at least the first two.
Fine.
Regular Jew, I can come up with myself.
So as an academic, the answer is, well, I don't mean academic like, you know, in university. I mean like
more
as
intellectual.
A more intellectual answer is the pshat, that the way Judaism works is as long as you're, by the way, Ramesh Tzvi brought me to YU for this exact question. The Bachram are asking there, like, who says Chassidus is real? Like, because it's so revolutionary and it's so like out there. They actually brought me to YU. I gave an hour and a half lecture. It's on YUTorah.org exactly about this question. Who says Chassidus is real? So the academic answer, like in the regular, as long as ideas that you're expressing in theology are based on sources and elucidate sources that come before, so you could go under the umbrella of Eilu Veilu Divrei Elokim Chaim. So, for instance, like Reb Shimon Bar Yochai in the Zohar, right? Reb Shimon Bar Yochai from the Zohar is saying things based on the oral tradition, right? The Zohar, we believe, Reb Shimon Bar Yochai wrote it, that's the oral tradition, that there is this oral tradition of the inner teachings of Torah. And Chassidus will elucidate those ideas. For instance, the Zohar says that the 248 mitzvahs are the 248 limbs of the king. And Chassidus elucidates that's the pshat, asher kedushanu b'mitzvah. So it's like anything, it's like the Ktzois or Reb Chaim or Reb Akiva Eiger explaining what Abaye and Rava say. Abaye and Rava say, Chveis Yushalei Medas, or that Bittel Berev and Reb Shimon Shkup will explain what's the lumdis behind it. So Chassidus explains what the lumdis behind the Zohar. That's according to, that would be a chelik of Torah like other chalakim in Torah. What would a chassid say? A chassid believes that's the difference, let's say, the difference between Kabbalah and Gemara. Kabbalah, the definition of the word means to receive. Which means that one is not allowed to make up ideas like this. And therefore, when it came to, for instance, the Arizal, where did the Arizal get the idea of Tzimtzum from? Where did he get it from? The Ramak doesn't say anything about Tzimtzum. The Arizal is the first one that introduced Tzimtzum. And the Ramak was the Arizal's Rebbe. So where did the Arizal get Tzimtzum from? So what do we believe? Who is the Arizal? So the Arizal's Rebbe was the Ramak, but the Arizal also had someone else teaching him. Eliyahu HaNavi. Now, what they'll say in universities with that, I know very well. I'd believe it, Be'emunah Shleima. Be'emunah Shleima, I believe that he had Gilui Eliyahu, and Eliyahu HaNavi taught him these things.
Eliyahu didn't teach Ramak?
Huh? Eliyahu didn't teach Ramak? Maybe, I don't know, but apparently not this idea. Because there's a seder of what's revealed when. The Baal Shem Tov had a Rebbe Achia Shiloini. And Be'etzim, the Chassidim believe that when the Rebbeim, that when a Rebbe says something, it's like it's almost like a Ke'en, like a taste of prophecy. It's like an idea that's being revealed from above. There's a story that they say that one time the Tzemach Tzedek said a mimer. The Tzemach Tzedek taught a Chassidic teaching. And after he finished, the Tzemach Tzedek's son and Reb Hillel Paracher, who was a big Chassid already of the Mitter Rebbe, he was one of the big Chassidim, so Reb Hillel Paracher had a debate with the Tzemach Tzedek's son, what's pshat in the mimer? So they said, let's go and ask the Tzemach Tzedek. And they went to the Tzemach Tzedek, and the Tzemach Tzedek said that his son is right. And Reb Hillel Paracher responded to him, when you're saying the mimer, it's Shechina Medeberes Metech Groinoi, the Shechina is talking through your mouth, it's revelation. But now you're talking from your regular side. I don't have to listen to what you say. Now you're talking from your own human opinion. When you were revealing it was a Gili Milamayla. So, and by the way, you should know, but if you ever see videos of Lubavitch Rebbe, I don't know if you're ever there by Verbrengen, see it in videos, when he said a mimer, he would always wrap a towel around his hand. I know, you ever see that? It's very interesting. You'd always wrap towels around his hand because, like, there's certain thing like that by the Berditchever, and Levitzik Berditchever said Kesser on Shabbos, he would hold a watch. It's such a thing that to hold a Gashmistika thing, to keep one down in this earth, not to have Klesa Nefesh, that the soul shouldn't go up. So he wraps the towel around his hand, so to hold something physical to keep in the earth. So Chassidim believe that when the Rebbeim said something, it's Mamash Gilei Elokus. You don't have to agree with that. My Chassidish part does, but my academic part is very happy saying that once you have ideas in Tor Shebaal Peh, and again, it's not making things up, it's elucidating those ideas, like the Zohar says this, and Chassid is elucidating, so there you go. Anyway, that's
good.
Just...
No, thank you. I appreciate it.
Let's see what Eliezer Berkovitz says. We have another 10 minutes. Let's read Eliezer Berkovitz. I want to read this, and you tell me how you see this as being, what you see being like the Rav, or Chassidus, or what do you think? Which side is on? So we're starting where it says page 89. We're going to start from three lines from the top of page 89. You need a page? Here, there's another page. Three lines from page 89, three lines from the top. The encounter. Yeah? The encounter reveals, meaning the encounter between God and man, the encounter reveals not only God's concern, but also what he desires of man. The relational attributes are God's law for man. Relational attributes means those parts of God that relate to us. Right? That God has aspects of him, his attributes relate to us. He's merciful, he's kind, and the law is part of his relational attributes. God, whose essence is hidden, and who reveals himself by involvement with his creation, making manifest these things, meaning Torah, in which he delights, is of necessity revealed as the lawgiver. And knows what makes him, what in, by necessity makes him revealed as lawgiver? Because of his involvement with creation. The delight of the eternal is his law for man. Since all revelation is divine involvement with men, and since all involvement is affirmation of the things God desires, revelation and law are inseparable. So how is he explaining Berkovitz? How is he saying why are revelation and law inseparable? Why? Because what's law a result of? His desire for involvement with men. Read that sentence again. Since all revelation is divine involvement with men, and since all involvement is affirmation of the things God desires, revelation law are inseparable. The encounter at Sinai revealed God as well as his law to Israel. What is this saying to you? Is this like the Rav or is this like Tanya?
Mixture of both.
I think so. I think it's exactly in the middle. He's saying over here that it's God's involvement with men, and the law is a continuation of the involvement. He says it even better in the next paragraph. We may also express the idea as follows. As religion is inconceivable without revelation, neither is it possible without the law of God. And as revelation and law of God are two things that you need to have religion. God's involvement in the world and his law for the world are one.
So that's the difference.
That what?
That already sounds.
God's involvement in the world and his law for the world are one. And that's what you said before. Remember what you said before? The word you said before? Relationship. Relationship, Eliezer Berkovitz is explaining that revelation is about relationship and law is about relationship. Which is not the same as what the Rav is saying, but it's not what Chassidus is saying. Let's read more. The law is the bond. Listen how beautiful. The law is the bond that...
But again, when Chassidus talks about...
We'll get to it. Wait. Let's see what he's saying. The law is the bond that preserves the relationship of divine concern beyond the fundamental religious experience of the encounter itself. Again, the law is the bond that preserves the relationship of divine concern beyond the fundamental religious experience of the encounter itself. The encounter passes quickly, but the law of the eternal remains forever. In other words, what's the law? Continuation of the relationship, which was what revelation was about. As the crystallization of what God desires of man, the law is the guarantee of God's continued interest in man. As long as God's law stands, he too remains involved in the destiny of man. When the mystery of the encounter has faded away, God is still related to man by means of his law. You all remember, we've spoken about many times what the Kuzari says. Why does the beginning of the revelation of the Ten Commandments, God say, I am the Lord your God that took you out of Egypt, and not I am the Lord your God that created heaven and earth? Involvement. Exactly what he's saying. Relationship. Now listen how beautiful this next sentence. When the precious moment in which man is granted the certitude of the presence has sunk into the darkness of the past, the fellowship with God may still be maintained by doing the will of God. The law is the avenue of contact beyond the point of encounter. So it's not yet Chassidus, because Chassidus is saying that what's the law? It's actually his limbs.
But wait, the Rabbi says the purpose of revelation is the halacha.
Yeah.
It's very similar to this one.
Again, so it's similar, but he's saying it's not just pshat that the revelation is about law. The way the Rav says it, at least over here, is that revelation is God teacher, God lawgiver. He's saying revelation is relationship. God cares about man. God is involved with man. He cares. He wants a relationship. The law is the crystallization of that precious moment of presence has sunk into darkness. We can't always have that revelation of God. Therefore, he gives that law. So it's not yet as intense as chassidus, where the law becomes God's limbs, where halacha is not, halacha is the revelation at Sinai continued. He's saying it's almost like, if I could give you this mashal, if you ever had the experience, you sit down on a bus or a plane, and somebody, you know, you sit down next to somebody, depending where I would say this mashal, I'd say you sit down next to a girl, you sit next to, next to a guy, depending to whom you're talking, yeah. But you sit down next to someone and you really like the person. The conversation goes well, right? So what do you say? What's the quintessential pickup line? So what's your phone number? You get the person's phone number, right? What's the pshat in the phone number? The person gives you a phone number. This is how to have a relationship with me. So Berkowitz is saying that the halacha is God's phone number. Chassidus is saying the halacha, the tefillin is not just God's phone number. It's God. It's his limbs. Let's read inside. The essence of the law is the same as that of the encounter itself. It is an expression of God's continued concern with man. The law that God commands man is the proof that he considers man. The law represents the highest affirmation of man, as well as his crown and dignity. By giving man the law, his maker declares, I do care how he lives and what he does with his life. That's beautiful. By giving man the law, the maker declares, I do care how he lives and what he does with his life. Charging him with the law, God testifies, as it were, that man is man enough to live under the law. The law is the sign that God is a measure of confidence in man. The command of God implies the encouragement, I order you because I know you can do it. For who should know the nature of man better than his maker? The law being willed by God is an indication that man, by fulfilling it, will reach the purpose contemplated by him for the Creator. Thus, law itself is a manifestation of God's love. And here in footnote 8, by the way, Eliezer Berkowitz says that this just shows you how the caricature of the law in Christianity, anyone that had that studied at all any Christian theology knows that in Christianity, the law is a dirty word, right? The whole thing, Paul abrogated the law. The law is the ultimate, God of the Old Testament, God of wrath and whatever, the law, and how, Jesus came to redeem us, to take us from out the burden of the law. That's what Paul's letters are all about. If you read not the beginning of the New Testament, the Mark and Luke, but the Paul's letters, Galatians and Romans and all those things, that he came, he went on the cross to take us out of the law, the burden of the law. And the law is looked as being, a burden, a yoke. And we say that the law is a manifestation of God's love. And so the rabbis taught in the Talmud, beloved are Israel, for the Holy One surrounded them with commandments. Being fully aware of the implication of the law as God's concern for man, Judaism, far from considering it a burden, recognize it as an object of desire revealed to the children of Israel. And this is what King David was able to sing. The law of the Eternal is perfect, restoring the soul, the testimony of that. We say this every Shabbos morning, right? Teres Hashem Tamima, the precepts of the Eternal are right, Mesam Chelev. The law is the most beautiful thing. We look at the Torah as a relationship. So Berkowitz is saying that halacha is relationship. What? Buber or Heschel. Yeah, that same type of... That school, Buber, Heschel, Berkowitz, are always about relationship. Chassidus is a lot more intense, where it's mamash, you're getting God's light. And the way the Rebbe is saying, from a very misnagdic way, is Sguli, God gives you the law, he's lawgiver, he gives you these laws, follow these laws, and you will get reward for them. Tov.
It's important to see that Berkowitz writes about relationship and stuff, because his book Faith After the Holocaust is totally almost very different than this.
Yeah, this was later on.
Yes,
yeah.
It's very good to see that he
recuperated.
Because it's involvement.
Totally. I mean, that's what this whole book is about. You've read this, I'm sure. That's what his whole book is about. His whole point of here, the whole point of the book is that he says after the reason was smashed, but the idols of the 19th century have disintegrated, and man is once again without direction. right? Because after Kant, all of, you know, reason and everything, so it's all about encounter, right? That's his whole philosophy is about encounter. Tov, shkoyach. It's a great book to read, by the way. I just highly recommend it. It's not hard, and it's...